The following program is paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Each weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, Talking Health, presented by CHI Mercy Health. Now, here's Talking Health with Lisa Platt on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Welcome to Talking Health, and I'm your host, Lisa Platt. And today we are actually doing a live remote from an undisclosed place, right? Right? Okay. Well, today we have Nicole Rodriguez, Director of Sexual Assault Services, and Katie Sloan, our anti-trafficking advocate, both from BPA. Thank you both for being here today.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa.
So I want to know a little bit about you. So who wants to go first? Nicole?
Sure.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about you, how you got to Roseburg, and what you do at BPA.
Yeah. So I came to Roseburg in 2015. I actually came out to do an AmeriCorps project. So I'd never heard of Roseburg before, but I Googled it, and the pictures came up of downtown. I was like, oh, it's so cute. I would love to live there. And it was very different from what I thought it was going to be, but it's worked out so beautifully, and I really found my community here. So I started with my AmeriCorps project, and that was to build a garden with kiddos in shelter. So I did that, and then a position opened up at BPA, and so I decided I wanted to stay and start doing that. So started out working with kids, and now I transitioned into being the sexual assault services director.
Terrific. And I'm nosy. So where did you come from? Because you thought we were cute. So
yes. I was actually in a very snowy Indiana. So I was looking at Oregon, and it looked like this beautiful, sunny state.
So Indiana, Midwest. Kansas City Chiefs fan, right?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. I had to work that in there. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Katie, and what you do and how you came to Roseburg.
So my name's Katie Sloan, and I came to Roseburg, I think I've lived here most of my life. I married my husband, who is originally from here, and so we came here to be around his family. I am a mother of six children, and that keeps me pretty busy. My role with Better Persons Advocacy is the anti-human trafficking advocate. I started with BPA, I think in 2015, I was a shelter coordinator. and kind of moved into the anti-human trafficking role here recently last April.
Okay. Well, welcome both of you. I know you're a little nervous, especially in our undisclosed live remote today. So you already mentioned, but I'll have you say it again, what BPA stands for. Katie, you want to share that?
BPA stands for Battered Persons Advocacy, and our name will be changing and will be announced at the gala on February 22nd.
Okay, then. So we'll keep that under wraps. What is the mission of BPA, and is it okay right now to shorten it up to say BPA?
Yes. I feel like we're pretty well known in the community as BPA, but we also like to say Battered Persons Advocacy as much as possible so that people don't confuse us. But the mission of BPA is that we are dedicated to creating a community free from family violence, sexual assault, stalking, and human trafficking. And we do that by providing community education, providing resources for community members. We also have shelter options. So we have a whole lot of resources. I'm sure we'll go into those a little bit more that we offer to the community. But we really also are here to collaborate with other community members as well so that we can create this community that is reaching towards a more positive, peaceful future.
So how long has BPA, Battered Persons Advocacy, been around? How did it get established?
So we have a really cool start. We started from a group of very passionate women that saw the problem of domestic violence in the community. And at that time, it wasn't really okay to talk about domestic violence or reach out for help. And so the advocates that first started us were just a really pretty brave group of women, I would say, that were willing to just pick people up in their cars in the middle of the night and provide a safe place for them to stay as they were trying to relocate from their abusers. And so we've been around for 40 years now. We're going into our 41st year, but we just celebrated our 40th birthday last year. So, and we started off with a different name then. So we've had two different name changes, and we're really looking forward to the next name change we have coming up.
So just out of curiosity, because I'm sure at times this can be a very emotional and very stressful trauma related field that you're in. Why, and both of you can answer, why did you choose this field as a career, Nicole?
Yeah, I was really interested when I was in college in human services and social services, and I knew that I loved working with kids. And so once I came out to BPA and saw what great work they were doing, specifically around kind of changing the community's culture and perceptions about sexual assault and domestic violence, I realized that this was really kind of my place and what I wanted to kind of pour myself into. So it really came from seeing the work that BPA was doing that I found my spot.
Katie? So I chose this career mainly, I was going to school at UCC for my human services degree, and I wanted to take my life experiences and use them to help other people so that I felt that the things that I had gone through in my life were for a purpose.
Okay. So we have a partnership with you through Mercy Foundation and the Human Trafficking Task Force, but what's your relationship, and it can be the 30,000-foot level, in the human trafficking effort here in Douglas County and in the state?
Yeah. So Marion Katowski is one of the main reasons that we have the Human Trafficking Task Force here in Douglas County, and she really identified a problem that was kind of under the table still, that not very many people were talking about, and she wanted to raise the awareness of it. And through that, just seeing the need that was in our county, we realized that BPA was the best place to really serve survivors and be able to provide housing, provide relocation for them, kind of just support services that they needed in trying to get out of a life of trafficking. And so that is really how that relationship formed between BPA and the Human Trafficking Task Force.
Katie, you want to add anything, being that you are the anti-human trafficking advocate?
So my relationship in the human trafficking effort in Douglas County is really just to continue to educate the community and raise awareness and to let survivors know that we're here and that we believe that they are experiencing this, and that we as a community can help them and create safety for them in a way that might need to be done.
So I always ask this question, even when I have Marion on the show, is, you know, define for us what human trafficking means, because there's different kinds of human trafficking. And I think the more we can share this in our community, the more that we can make our community aware of what the symptoms are of human trafficking.
So the definition of human trafficking is the use of force, fraud, and coercion to obtain a profit, either by using somebody as sexual profits or also labor, forced labor. So that's what that looks like. It's the use of force, fraud, and coercion.
Okay. And Katie or Nicole, can you give us some current statistics in Douglas County as well as the state of Oregon?
The current statistics for Douglas County this year is that Douglas County has 16 identified survivors. Statewide, the numbers vary. Clackamas County has 138 that they've identified. Lane County has 120. Multnomah County has 208. Jackson County has 27.
So is it true then, or is it, you know, factual then that, you know, we're ripe for human trafficking because of our location on the I-5 corridor and in relationship to the ports on the coast and then the mountain areas?
Yes, definitely. I-5 plays a major role in our ripeness for human trafficking, as well as the different interstates that can be easily accessed when you get to Portland, to Seattle, from California. We're also a rural community, and so that plays a huge role in it too.
So you're being involved with the task force. What are some of the things that the task force itself is working on as far as projects?
Oh, we are working on a lot. Currently, we're working on educating the medical providers on what to look for, how to identify human trafficking survivors. We're also working with the schools to bring in prevention materials free to them, as well as continuing to provide community education and outreach also.
And I know, and maybe you can speak to this, Katie. I know that Marion does a lot of presentations with the truck driving school.
Yes, she does. She provides classes quite often for the truckers down in Clark's Branch with UCC students.
So as the advocate for the task force and for our county, what are some of the responsibilities you have in working with some of the victims?
A lot. The responsibilities that I have are like safety planning with survivors, helping them to relocate if they need relocating services. Also, helping them access medical care. Maybe it's court accompaniment if they are legally involved somehow. It could be sexual assault responses. There's a lot of different things that I do as an advocate with direct services.
One of the questions we asked Marion last week was about the new report that had come out over the last weekend, and the fact that it seems like we don't have enough cases prosecuted. And she was very clear to say it's not that we don't want to prosecute, but it's because the victims are having a hard time reliving that victimization all over again. Can you speak to a little to that?
Yeah, I think that if you're going to look at somebody coming forward and speaking to law enforcement, one, a human trafficking survivor may not even trust law enforcement. It's also ingrained into them not to speak to law enforcement. Excuse me. They are very well groomed throughout their victimization, and it's often role played what to say should they encounter law enforcement or medical providers, and it's very hard to come forward.
Okay. Well, we're going to come back, and I'm going to have you answer that question again. So this is Lisa Platt, and we are going to take a short break. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talking Health on Local Talk at 4, brought to you by CHI Mercy Health on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hi, it's Lisa Platt, and we are back with Talking Health, presented by CHI Mercy Health. Next week, I know you all will want to tune in. We will be hosting the Health and Wellness Team of the City of Roseburg. Yes, so tune in, learn how they are going to help us all to stay fit and be healthy throughout our community. But today we are talking with Nicole Rodriguez and Katie Sloan, both of Battered Persons Advocacy and the Douglas County Human Trafficking Task Force. Ladies, where are we at our undisclosed location?
Do we want to tell them where we are? We are at Mercy Foundation.
There you
today.
Go. So, anyways, all the studios were booked up today, and so we've got Kyle here kind of, and Dale kind of making sure I don't do anything I shouldn't do. So, ladies, thank you for coming back. And, you know, Katie, I want to reiterate one more time one of the reasons that we don't have a lot of prosecuted cases at this time.
Yeah, so we were talking about how it's hard for survivors to come forward, how there is a lack of trust with law enforcement. And maybe it's a fear of just, you know, using their voice and coming forward and speaking of their victimization. It's also really difficult from what I've seen to get actual trafficking charges prosecuted. We're seeing them dropped down to coercion charges or solicitation of a minor charges. And so that also can be kind of tough for somebody to want to come forward when it's being lesser charged.
And I think in our small community, it can feel really unsafe to come forward without fear of retaliation. We've worked with some survivors on the idea of relocating to a safer place and then possibly trying to work with law enforcement if that feels like a better option for them.
Okay. Well, my colleague over here, my sidekick, Kathleen Nickel, asked me to ask you, both of you, in our community or in Douglas County, do we have more sex trafficking or more labor trafficking? Can you speak to that?
That would be a really hard question to answer, because as you can imagine, this is not really the kind of thing that we have really great accurate statistics on. There's a lot of guilt and shame kind of in fear too and coming forward. So it can be really difficult to have statistics on maybe what we're seeing. But we do know in our county that there is labor trafficking through agricultural means. So sometimes seasonal workers that are able to come in will not get paid the wages that they were promised. They'll have to live in really difficult conditions. We've even heard of people that would be employing them waiting till the end of the season and then saying that they're going to call ICE on them. And so if they may have issues with legalization, they may get really fearful and leave without that payment. So those are other forms of trafficking that I think maybe we don't hear about as often as the human trafficking when we think of, you know, children or minors being sex trafficked. But that's also something that we are facing that is kind of underground because people are fearful of coming forward and saying, you know, I don't have a citizen status, but I experienced this labor trafficking.
Katie, do you want to add anything?
I think the labor trafficking can really be difficult to identify, not only with the migrant workers that Nicole was talking about, but also with contractors that are using individuals to exploit their labor. Also, sales crews are using people for labor trafficking as well. So it comes up in a lot of different ways with labor trafficking that it's really hard to identify.
Can you kind of give us the profile of the person that's being impacted or affected by human trafficking?
That's a good question, because we really believe that it could happen to anyone. So we had a really amazing survivor speaker come out from Bend. Her name is Sarah, and she's doing a lot of work with In Our Backyard, which is a human trafficking education organization. And through Sarah's story, we heard about her experience of having a dad who was in law enforcement and a mom who was a multi-million dollar real estate agent. And her parents had no idea what was happening to her. So, yes, I think that there are some vulnerability factors. So we know that young runaway youth are contacted within, isn't it, the first 48 hours to be solicited for either a place to stay in exchange for sex or exchange of food or money or clothing, you know, these necessary needs that they have. So we know that minors are kind of at a vulnerable risk, but it can happen to, like we said, people that may be experiencing immigration issues or people that are under the poverty line and are looking for a way to make their life better. You can be rural, it can be happening in the cities. So really we believe that it can happen to anybody.
And Katie, I think you mentioned that part of your role is to do more education in the schools. Can you talk a little bit about what that education looks like?
So in February, I think it's the later end of February, we're doing a two-day training for the different schools in Douglas County that want to access the prevention. And so we'll be training their staff on how to provide that curriculum to their students. And and the red flags to look for. We've also, Marion and I did a training with Douglas Winston Dillard School District for all of their staff on what to look for around trafficking and how to identify it. Also how to refer any students that might need assistance in regards to trafficking.
And this question isn't one that I know that you prepared for, but I bring this up because I know that you're going to be doing a presentation in Winston-Dillard. I attended the presentation you did at Phoenix School. I brought at that time my 16-year-old to the presentation. We were both blown away by it. So when we're talking about the student, what are some of the factors or some of the things that parents need to watch out for to ensure their kiddos are not in any way being impacted or affected by human trafficking?
That's a really good question. I think it's important to really be involved with your children's lives, to know who they're talking to, what kind of social media they're using. I personally, as a mother, do not monitor my children's phones, but I do teach them on what to look for as far as predators go. I also teaching children not to give out a lot of personal information, not to just talk to and friend random people. So I think that's very important with our youth.
Nicole, do you want to add anything?
Like Katie said, just being kind of aware of how they are using social media, if they're using that in a healthy way, because we know that predators that are online will be looking for key phrases, things like "I'm so lonely" or "no one understands me" or "I'm not happy with my family." They'll be looking for kind of young people, boys and girls, that are vulnerable and not feeling like they have a connection at home, because they want to be able to provide that connection. And that's really kind of how that coercion can start. So yes, really teaching teenagers and young people how to be safe with their online usage, but then also kind of what signs to look for with their friends too. So being aware if they have friends that kind of drop off the face of the planet all of a sudden, or communication changes, or they have this older friend or boyfriend in their life that is giving them things, promising them things, promising to take them on trips. Because we know that young people, when they come forward, it's often in small ways with their friends kind of reaching out for help. So we want to provide ways for young people to feel like they can be a resource for their friends if they identify something.
Okay, thank you. So Katie, what are some of that you mentioned some of the difficulties that survivors face after they leave trafficking? Kind of embellish a little bit more about what some of those difficulties are.
So the difficulties could be experiencing a lot of guilt, thinking that they asked for this to be their lifestyle. Shame, experiencing a lot of shame from the compound traumas that they've experienced. Complex trauma in and of itself can be a huge thing for survivors. Fear is also something that survivors can experience, fear of being found, fear of coming forward, fear of speaking about what has happened to them. They could also experience life skills that they haven't yet developed, difficulties with that, experiencing employment barriers with not having a huge history of a verifiable employment. They could also experience houselessness, not having anywhere to go and having to deal with that. They could also be facing fear of getting in contact with their families again if they've been isolated from them. So those are a lot of the things that survivors can experience.
Nicole, you want to add anything?
I think that Katie said it really well. I think the biggest thing is just feeling like you will ever be a normal member of society again after experiencing that continuous trauma after trauma. Just from what we've seen, it takes a lot of support services, mental health support, just because there's so many different intersections that we see with survivors.
And I can imagine once they start transitioning back into the community, on resumes, job skills, et cetera, I'm sure that's probably adds to their fears of being revictimized.
Yes, and they just have kind of unique barriers, barriers such as not having identification or, like Katie said, having a verifiable history of employment. So those are all things that Katie works really closely with people on.
Okay, well, great. I think we'll stop here. We'll take another short break. You're listening to Talking Health on Local Talk at 4, brought to you by CHI Mercy Health on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hi, we are back live from our break, and we are with Katie and Nicole. They are from the Battered Persons Advocacy, and we've been talking with them a little bit about battered persons, but we've also been talking a lot about human trafficking. And I want to pick up from our conversation. Let's talk a little bit of some of the misconceptions people have about human trafficking and human trafficking in Douglas County.
Sure. So I still hear people say that they are shocked to know that this is happening here in our county, which I understand because I think it'd be something that it'd be really nice to be naive to. I would love to think it doesn't happen here. But I think one of the misconceptions that people have about trafficking is that it's easy to leave, or that if people really wanted to reach out for help, they would, say if they were at the doctor's office, you know, that they would take that opportunity to get help. But we know that because of that complex trauma and all of the brainwashing that really goes into trafficking, that abusers and traffickers will really tell their victim that nobody will ever believe them, even if they do come forward. They tell them that nobody will ever accept them or love them. And so that level of, you know, intense kind of reprogramming, if you would call it, that goes into that makes it so that it's very difficult for people to feel like if they leave, they'll be able to get help. So it kind of creates that sense of hopelessness. And I think that people may believe that people have asked for that kind of situation to come into their lives because of poor choices. But we really know that it's because of a piece of force, fraud, or coercion. So people do not willingly want to participate in this. It's something that has been brought upon them.
Katie, you want to add anything?
Yeah, so I think some of another misconception might even be that it's consensual, that the person that is being trafficked is consenting to that and either selling themselves consensually for sex or working for free, but really who's going to work for free? Also, I think another misconception is that because we're in a rural area, that trafficking isn't happening here. Trafficking is happening everywhere, and I think because we are a rural area, we're more prone to it. Traffickers look for those rural areas to take their victims to.
So you mentioned earlier, and I have to tell you, knowing and being involved with the work that you have been doing over the years and our relationship with you, it just seemed like a natural fit for BPA to get involved. And you, Nicole, you might want to talk a little bit to this. It seems like a trafficker has the same identifiers as an abuser in domestic violence.
Very similar. So we know that these people are good at presenting themselves in public. They seem very personable, very likable. They are good at identifying people who are vulnerable. So they are very good at observing social situations. They're good at getting the trust of people around them. They're very smooth talkers, which is kind of a way that makes it easy for them to get young folks to be interested in them. And they won't leave their victim alone once they have them. So I would say that's one thing to look out for. If you're working with somebody or you're a service provider and your client is not allowed to be alone with you, or your client is not allowed to not have somebody on the phone listening into what's happening, those would definitely be signs of something kind of funky going on.
Okay. So if it was somebody that, you know, isn't in the, they're just somebody that might run into somebody at a grocery store. What are some of the things that a person could look for if they're just sensing something doesn't seem right about this relationship?
So keeping an eye out for young people that are with adults that look like it just doesn't fit. If the young person is potentially kind of averting eye contact, not feeling comfortable making eye contact with anybody. If they have any like strange bruises or anything like that on their body. Another indicator might be strange clothing choices for the time of year. So right now it's pretty cold outside, so we're all kind of bundled up, but maybe somebody, if it seems like the clothing didn't fit the weather, that could potentially be a sign.
I think some other signs to look for would also be, and you mentioned the lack of eye contact, somebody that is really controlling or dominates the conversation that they might be having with another person. So say you're at the grocery store and you see what appears to be a couple together and you're just interacting like you normally would in a grocery line, saying, hi, how are you? Maybe that older person is dominating that conversation. They're really not giving the person that they're with an opportunity to speak or acknowledge that they're really there.
Marion had mentioned specifically in this presentation that you're going to do in Winston, that there are markings. There are certain tattoos that kind of label who is the follower of a trafficker. Can you just name a few of those? Because it's not all tattoos. I want to make that clear, but there are a couple that are very common.
So you're regarding branding. You're talking
Correct.
About branding. And so some very common ones are like a bag with a dollar sign on it, like money bags. Another common one would be, crowns. Quite often, the trafficker will put their street name on their victim. So that identifies who essentially owns that person. Some other ones that really don't get talked about very often could be a Hello Kitty tattoo, something very simple as a Hello Kitty tattoo.
Okay. She had mentioned once about there being like a queen who kind of is the one that solicits others to come under the fold. Is that correct?
Yeah. So like, I think what you're referring to is what would be termed as a bottom. So
okay.
The bottom would be the survivor that has earned the trust of the solicitor or trafficker that is helping train the other survivors as well as to what to do, what to look for, how to approach other people and sell themselves, essentially.
Okay. Nicole, do you want to add anything? Okay. So you have a lot of folks involved in this human trafficking task force. Talk a bit, little bit about some of the community collaborations.
So it has been so helpful to have the support of law enforcement in the trafficking task force because they're really able to bring forward cases that seem like there's a strange element to them. And then they're able to kind of talk to Marion or talk to advocates and say, does this sound like it has a trafficking piece to it so that we can all kind of work together to make sure that we're not missing anything in identification. We've been working with the juvenile department to kind of work with some of the youth there that have been identified to help them know that they have safer options, that they can choose some different kinds of, you know, choices in the future if they want help. And then working with the schools to make sure that if they have any identified students who may be at risk for trafficking or who have experienced it, Marion's been working to try to get information to the motels and hotels in the area so that if they see anything that looks like trafficking, they know how to reach out for support with that. And then it's kind of creative things as well, like convenience stores that might see people come through that are being trafficked, and then working with churches as well to really get that awareness out there.
Okay. So if somebody would want to get involved with the Human Trafficking Task Force, how do they get involved? Oh, Katie's going to read some information to us.
So if somebody is interested in getting involved with the Human Trafficking Task Force, it would be really just contacting Marion and letting them know that they have an interest and would like to volunteer and help the task force move forward in the community with this.
So do you have a website or her contact info?
She can be emailed at Marion Pearson at chiwest.com. And she can also be contacted at 541-677-4818.
And if somebody now hearing this today may feel that they are a victim, how do they get in touch with you guys?
We can be contacted 24/7. So we have a crisis line with Better Persons Advocacy, and that number is 541-673-7867.
Say it one more time.
541-673-7867.
Okay. So you want to talk a little bit about this upcoming presentation. And you know what? I think this will be a good opportunity to take our last break, and then you can come back and talk about that. So stay tuned. You've been listening to Talking Health on Talking Radio, 1240 KQES.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, we are back with this talking radio show, as everyone laughed at me during the break. So I want to thank you for joining us today for the talking radio show, because we have been talking with Katie Sloan of the Human Trafficking Task Force, who is the advocate, and Nicole Rodriguez, Director of Sexual Assault Services with Battered Persons Advocacy. You're almost done, lady. Almost done. I'm just going to drill you with a couple of things. So we keep mentioning about this upcoming community event, and if you'd like to share with us, Nicole, some information about that event.
Yeah, so this Thursday at the Winston Community Center in Winston, Oregon, at 6 o'clock, there's going to be a free event. And we really recommend that young people, teens, students, parents show up for this event, community members, people that are interested in learning more about what trafficking looks like in our county. And we'll have a guest speaker, Detective Kevin Taggart, there to share with us some of the sting operations that he's done. That's pretty interesting.
So do you recommend children at least the age of 12 attending?
Yeah, so some of the material might be a little bit sensitive for kids that are under 12. But if you're a parent that is ready to have those conversations with your kiddo, then definitely come on out. And there will be a lot of people there to answer questions and provide support for that.
And if people want to find out more information about human trafficking and upcoming events, can you give us some directions, some websites? Where can they get this info?
Yeah, so there is a Douglas County Human Trafficking Task Force Facebook page, and that provides local information as well as different articles and different information around trafficking. And then also the Oregon Department of Justice website under Victim Services, as well as Polaris or Human Trafficking Hotline websites. And if a person really wants to, they can just get down and start Googling human trafficking and read whatever comes up. That will provide a lot of information for trafficking as well.
And if they call the national hotline, will it get directed to Oregon and then down to Douglas County? How does that work?
So we are currently working on that. But yes, you can call the national trafficking hotline. You can provide anonymous tips to anything that you might be questioning or seeing or suspecting that is human trafficking. And they will either contact the police or see where to go with that information.
Okay. So I'm going to give you guys one more opportunity. What is the message you would like to leave with our audience today about human trafficking and or battered persons advocacy?
The message I would like to leave with the community is that this is a community problem. Human trafficking affects us all, and it's really going to take a community to combat it and work together. And if people are trying to figure out how they want to help or what they can do, they can volunteer at Battered Persons Advocacy and learn more about it. They can contact Marion with the Human Trafficking Task Force, and they can ask for trainings. We provide trainings and information to the community.
Nicole?
Well, I think that Katie said it really well, that it's going to take a community effort to really face trafficking and make sure that our community is a place that is not hospitable to that kind of thing. And I think that if there are any survivors listening, I would want them to know that we believe them, that we're here to support them, and that there are safe, peaceful options for them if they are able to reach out for help.
Okay. Well, ladies, I want to thank our guests today, Nicole Rodriguez and Katie Sloan. Next week, I want to remind you to tune in. We'll have representatives here from the Health and Wellness Program of the City of Roseburg. My friend over here, Kathleen, would like me to share with you that we will be having a heart health presentation, Love Your Heart. And I am going to, this is my friend, Dr. Abasura. Join local cardiologist Dr. Abasura and Dr. Osman from the Shaw Heart Center for a moderated Q&A panel discussion focused on heart health issues. And it will be on Monday, February 24th from 1 to 3 in Mercy Medical Center's conference rooms A and B. It's free to you. We want you all to come. So park in the South Visitor Lot at the Orange West Hospital. There'll be a flag up there. If you need more information, I want you to call Kathleen at 541-677-2114. Also, I want to remember, take just a moment out to remember Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. for his leadership, his courage and influence in the struggle for civil rights as we go ahead and remember today. If you have any questions that you would like my friend Kathleen to answer, you can reach her at mercycommunityrelations@chiwest.com. Or she loves Facebook. She loves to get Facebook messages. Give her a buzz there. Talking Health, just remember the Talking Radio, is brought to you by CHI Mercy Health. We are pleased to sponsor this show here on KQEN Local Talk at 4. And on behalf of the whole folks care team at Mercy Medical Center, please remember to be kind to one another, eat healthy, exercise when you can, and have a happy, healthy week.
The preceding program was paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.